The virus pandemic presents a historic challenge.
In this program, the IMF's Fabio Natalucci on the destabilizing effects of COVID-19.
And this challenge requires a forceful policy response to address health concerns, preserve the stability of the global financial system, and protect the productive capacity of the economy.
Welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. I'm Bruce Edwards. Early this year, financial markets were looking solid, and there was a widespread sense of optimism on the back of low interest rates, reduced trade tensions, even signs of stabilization in the global economy. But COVID-19 changed all of that. Fabio Natalucci heads the team that produces the IMF's Global Financial Stability Report, the last one published amid a historic drop in equity markets and volatility levels last seen during the global financial crisis 10 years ago. Natalucci says the global pandemic is proving a considerable challenge to the stability of the global economy. So the health crisis was lingering for months without much of an impact on the economy. What in particular destabilized the global economy so quickly?
So as we know, the year in fact had a good start. So there was a widespread sense of optimism in financial markets that was supported by accommodative monetary policy, a resolution of trade tension, and some signs of stabilization in the economy, in the global economy. So it was a good start. And then in mid-February, as the virus began to spread globally, market participants started to fear that the outbreak could in fact become a global pandemic with potential for a severe and lengthy downturn. And so unfortunately, investor fear proved to be justified. So equity prices fell sharply, in credit markets, spreads skyrocketed, especially in riskier segments. And then we saw oil prices plummeting in the face of global demand and the failure of the OPEC plus countries to reach an agreement on output cap. So this volatile market condition led to a flight to quality, to safety and liquidity of government securities, and yields on government bonds, they fell pretty abruptly and sharply. Meanwhile, emerging markets were facing a perfect storm. They experienced the sharpest reversal in portfolio flows on record, both in dollar terms, north of $100 billion, as well as a share of emerging market GDP, about 0.4%. In recent weeks, we have seen decisive and bold monetary and fiscal policy action aimed at containing the fallout from the pandemic, and that has helped stabilize investor sentiment. In fact, markets have pared back some of the earlier losses in equities and in credit markets as well. So one way to summarize all this is to look at through the lenses of global financial conditions. Now, financial conditions that eased steadily over the course of 2019, so since the last Global Financial Stability Report in the fourth quarter and early 2020, and then they tightened sharply into March 2020. Not only was that tightening very pronounced, but the speed of the tightening was unprecedented, even if we compare that to the global financial crisis. So it was a very tight, a very sharp tightening of financial conditions and very fast within a very narrow window of time. So the tightening in financial condition, the downgrade of the global economy, they significantly shifted the distribution of global growth 1 year from now massively toward negative outcomes. Essentially, we have seen a significant increase in downside risk to growth and financial stability. And we can look at this through measure. One is there is 5% probability or an event that happens once every 20 years, the global growth could fall to -7.4%. Now, for comparison, the threshold was above 2%, plus 2% in October 2019. And so that -7.4% compared to historical norm, it's approaching level that we last saw during the financial crisis. And the odds of global growth exceeding zero, so being positive territory for 2020, is now close to only 4%.
So what's behind the extreme swings in equity markets?
So in previous Global Financial Stability Report, we had highlighted that stretch valuations, so the deviation of asset prices from fundamental values, as one of the financial vulnerabilities that could be unmasked by a tightening in financial conditions. And that's exactly what we have seen. And that unwinding of stretch valuation became an amplifier that likely magnified the sell-off in equity prices. In fact, before the adjustment in late February and March, there were large deviations from fundamental values were evident across multiple countries and across sectors, so not just equities, but also in credit. In equity markets, specifically prior to the sell-off, the ratio of equity price to earnings had in fact reached the highest level since the global financial crisis, supported by optimistic analyst forecasts for 2020 earnings per share. Now, if you look at our model, the model we use in terms of assessment of equity price misalignment, equity valuation had become increasingly stretched relative to fundamental values since the October 2019 Global Financial Stability Report, and in fact had approached historically high levels in several countries. Now, that said, after the virus outbreak, equity prices fell very sharply through mid-March, and that has helped wiping out a significant portion of valuation in many markets and sectors, although there are a few exceptions.
And so do you think that the markets have actually proven better at handling this volatility than they were 10 years ago during the global financial crisis?
So I think there is a fundamental shift in terms of structure of the market here. In number of markets, banks play a lesser role than they did 10 years ago. So think of banks as the fortress, the center of the financial system. Banks have become stronger, they have higher liquidity, they have higher capital. So they are presumably more able to weather this. However, some of the activity has shifted away from banks toward what we call non-bank financial institutions or market-based finance. And so this is where some of the stress we are seeing now. And so the big policy question here is the extent to which the center of the system is indeed more resilient and may be tested by the crisis. And then the question number two is the extent to which the periphery of the system, so the non-bank financial intermediaries, are able to absorb and weather the increase in volatility. So I think at this point, it's an open question. We need to see how the crisis evolves.
So the whole idea behind the Global Financial Stability Report is to spot vulnerabilities in the financial system. Why do we care about financial vulnerabilities as we struggle to contain this health crisis? And what sectors concern you the most at this stage?
An important difference between what we experienced today at the global financial crisis 10 years ago, that this shock did not originate in the financial sector itself. This is a shock related to a virus, and the economies are required to consider factors that don't usually take into consideration, like the propagation of a virus and virus epidemiology models. However, it's still important to consider the health of the financial system, to make sure that is that the financial system is able to absorb at least part of the shock and not become an amplifier of the shock itself. But we want to make sure that the financial system is healthy and is able to contribute eventually to the recovery of the global economy. So the continued spread of the virus may require imposition of tougher and longer lasting containment measures. That may lead to a further tightening of global financial conditions, and this measure could result in a more severe and prolonged downturn. Now, in that adverse scenario, policy space may be more limited and investor sentiment may become more fragile. So this tightening of financial conditions, in turn, may expose some cracks in the global financial system. And that's, in some senses, the objective of the Global Financial Stability Report, highlighting financial vulnerabilities that may become amplifier of this shock. Now, so I'm going to mention four. One is that asset manager may face further outflows from their funds and may be forced to sell assets into falling markets. Number two, high levels of borrowing by companies may lead to debt distress and higher defaults as the economy comes to a sudden stop. Number three, emerging and frontier markets. In those markets, authorities may find it challenging to contain the stabilizing effect of sharp reversal portfolio flows on domestic financial markets. So a loss of external debt financing would likely put pressure on more levered and less creditworthy borrowers, leading to a rise in debt restructure. And then finally, bank may act as an amplifier should the crisis deepen further. Now, of course, banks have more capital, more liquidity than in the past. They have been subject to stress tests, and central bank liquidity support has helped mitigate this funding risk. And this is the concept of the fortress of the global financial system that's become more resilient. So that should put them in a better position than at the onset of the global financial crisis. The resilience of banks, however, may be tested in the face of large market losses and credit losses. If that happens, that may cause them to cut back lending to the economy, amplifying the slowdown in activity.
So you mentioned earlier emerging markets, and they have taken a real hit in terms of capital flows, with investors looking for safer ground. But with government bonds now, the government bond yields mostly below 1% at the moment. Do you think that investors may well turn once again to emerging markets for higher yield once this crisis is behind us?
So as I said, prolonged external pressure will be a test for emerging markets, right? So the sudden stop in economic activity and portfolio outflows, together with oil price shock, represent a severe stress test for many of the emerging markets along three lines. First, emerging market bond issuers are much more levered than they were in 2008. They include new issuers with large dependence on oil and other commodities and lower rated issuers. Second, many major emerging markets have less policy space. That is true if you look at real policy rates in most emerging markets, they are now much lower than they were in 2008, especially for those countries traditionally with much higher interest rate. And also fiscal policy space is generally more constrained. Debt at significantly higher levels and wider structural budget deficit. And then third, many of these emerging markets are now much more reliant on foreign portfolio investors and external funding than they were in 2008, 2009. Going forward, if you consider the model that we use here at the IMF to explain portfolio flows, three factors essentially are the main driver. One is US rates, interest rates, one is the value of the US dollars, and then global risk appetite. And so seeing through the lenses of this, one can take some comfort from the fact that lower policy rate in advanced economies, they do provide more space for central banks in emerging markets in terms of easing monetary policy. So there are more space to ease, everything else equal. And then two, if policy action taken in large advanced economies, think about the policy action taken by the Fed, by the ECB, Bank of England, Bank of Japan. So if this policy action, if they are successful in supporting the global economy and restoring market confidence, that increased risk-taking in terms of global risk appetite will also benefit emerging markets. And in fact, in that scenario, they would support flows back to the emerging markets and capital flows could in fact come back to emerging markets.
So while the pandemic actually started in China, its economy seems to have held up relatively well. How do you explain that?
Now, compared to other countries, financial conditions in China have been broadly stable so far, reflecting probably a few factors. One, the external financial linkages of China are still limited compared to other countries. Second, there is a stronger role played by government-owned financial institutions and firms. And then third, early proactive efforts by the authorities likely help stabilize market conditions and sentiment. The central bank has taken a number of steps, including maintaining easy liquidity condition, directing banks to maintain credit to corporates, and reducing policy rates. And as a reflection of that, equity markets have in fact reversed the initial declines, albeit on reports about government intervention. Now, that said, financial conditions for specific weaker segments may in fact be worse than headline numbers suggest. And there are in fact elevated vulnerabilities that we have highlighted in previous global financial stability report, particularly in the corporate banking and so-called shadow banking sector. And so I'm going to highlight a few here. Should the health crisis and a significant growth slowdown could increase financial stress through the following channels. The balance sheet of small and medium-sized banks will likely weaken going forward as their limited capacity to support small and medium-sized enterprise increases distress among those firms. Second, credit and liquidity risk are rising for large and heavily indebted property developers, which are under pressure due to strains in their funding markets and a sharp slowdown in sales. And then third, non-bank financial institutions, some of which operate with large liquidity and maturity mismatch, often high leverage. And again, the financial stability report in the past spent quite a bit of time focusing on this, on the shadow banking there. This non-bank financial institution could in fact face outflows reflecting declining equity prices, rising bond defaults, or weakening investor confidence.
So in the end, what do you think it's going to take to stabilize the economy as this pandemic continues to unfold and once it has run its course?
Now, the virus pandemic presents a historic challenge, and this challenge requires a forceful policy response to address health concerns, preserve the stability of the global financial system, and protect the productive capacity of the economy. Now, the priority, of course, is to save lives and implement appropriate containment measures to avoid overwhelming health system. And in fact, country authorities need to support people and companies that have been most affected by the virus outbreak. Now, the Global Financial Stability Report focuses on financial markets issues. And so in terms of from the angle of financial sector, to preserve the stability of the global financial system and support the economy, central banks across the globe have been so far the first line of defense. What central banks do is they aim to ensure that households and firms continue to have access to credit at an affordable price. And so more broadly, policymakers need to maintain a balance between safeguarding financial stability and supporting economic activity. Now, that's the backward-looking part. Now, what are the next steps that need to be taken going forward? And that's where it gets a little trickier, in the sense that events are still unfolding. So it's not possible at this point to fully assess how effectiveness policies implemented so far has been. Now, we need to acknowledge the market sentiments have shown signs of improvements in response to policymaker action. And in fact, through early April, when the report closed, we have seen risk asset prices retracing some of the early declines. So it is clear that a combination of monetary, fiscal, and fiscal sector policy will continue to be needed to support the stability of the global financial system and to preserve the soundness of financial institutions. And that is true, especially if economic activities remain paralyzed for longer than anticipated. And then finally, let me conclude saying a few words about multilateral cooperation. Multilateral cooperation is essential to help reduce the intensity of the virus shock and the damage to the global economy and financial system. Countries confronting the twin crisis of health and external funding shock, for example, there are a number of them relying on external financing, commodity exporter dealing with the plunging commodity prices. Those countries may need bilateral or multilateral assistance to ensure the health spending is not compromised during this difficult adjustment process. And the IMF, with $1 trillion in available resources, is actively supporting member countries.
Indeed. Thank you so much for this, Fabio. And let's hope that the next Global Financial Stability Report in 6 months from now might be a little brighter than this one.
Thank you for the opportunity here. Let me remind the listener that this Global Financial Stability Report, we only have Chapter 1, which provides a broad assessment of financial condition and financial vulnerabilities, but there will be follow-up chapters in May focused on risky credit markets, profitability of the banking sector, emerging markets, as well as green finance that hopefully will complement what has been done in Chapter 1.
Look forward to it. Thank you.
Fabio Natalucci is Deputy Director of the IMF's Monetary and Capital Markets Department and oversees the writing of the Global Financial Stability Report. You can read the full report at imf.org. And if you like this podcast, look for us on Spotify or your favorite podcast app. Just search for IMF Podcasts. You can also follow us on Twitter at IMF_podcast. Thanks for listening.